tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
In greeting friends around the world, millions of professing Christians are really big-hearted. They are willing to forgive Christ. To forgive Christ for being the kind of a non-entity that he was, for being all those things that many people think he was. You look at the books that are supposed to be religious books these days, some of which may claim that he was a homosexual, others that he was a married man with a family, others that he was a mushroom and not a real person at all, others that the Passover was a plot, the crucifixion was a fraud, and very likely any such books like that will become instant bestsellers. At least they will get rages and reviews and all types of publications that criticize various new books. Maybe there was something to that prophecy that said, you know, if you're writing a book, there is never any end, and one that talked also about if all the things Jesus had done had been written in the books, it was supposed the world could not contain them. Well, of course, there was a slight misunderstanding about the real statement made by the disciple who said that, because it had more to do with the understanding of people that they couldn't take, they couldn't absorb mentally, especially spiritually, all the means of what Jesus did. But it's incredible what people say about a person they had never really seen a picture of, never read very much about, don't know very much about, that all the speculation and supposition about who and what Jesus was, why he came to this earth, if he did, whether he was human or divine or a combination of both, what was his purpose, what was his message, if any, about his life, what he came to accomplish, did he come to begin a church, to start a religion, to save the world, to set up his kingdom, or just why? Biblical illiteracy, absolute ignorance of the Bible and what it says, is almost like a disease today. It's something that people catch like the common cold. Almost everyone seems to have a certain degree of it, and no one seems to want to get over it very much. Write a book that alleges Jesus was riding naked across the countryscape in a motorcycle, and probably gonna make a movie out of it. I understand they're doing that in Sweden. But try to tell people exactly who and what Jesus was from the Bible, well, that's another matter entirely. So there are many stories, and many of them are quite sensational. Churches these days can be called gay, thus flouting what Jesus himself said, what the Bible says, what the Apostle Paul said, what the Bible condemns, which is homosexuality, and yet there can be gay churches with gay pastors. Practically anything can legally, according to the U.S. Constitution in our country, where we allow complete legal freedom of worship, freedom of religion, and of course we're all very thankful for that. Are you thankful that the Church of Satan the Devil is allowed to exist? I am. Now that sounds crazy. A lot of people would say, what do you mean? You ought to go out there and probably burn a cross on the yard or infiltrate it or bring it down. And of course that is the main excitement in a lot of religious organizations. Is all of the activity, clandestinely and behind the scenes, the infighting, the viciousness, the attacks, the continual attempt to destroy or to, in some way, discredit some other religious organization. But no, I'm actually thankful that the Church of Satan the Devil is allowed to exist, because if it weren't, then perhaps there would be other churches that wouldn't be allowed to exist, and if they wouldn't be allowed to exist, then possibly even the true church would also be persecuted, and people would be put to the torch or burned at the stake, as in old times. You know, when you actually look into the Bible to find out what people don't know about Bible prophecy, about Jesus Christ, about the Bible itself, it's enormous. One of the most commonly assumed frauds of the modern era is if you can prove anything by the Bible. Most people claim they don't want to read the Bible because they can't understand it anyway. Now, they don't know that. It's just that they opened the Bible once and they saw a lot of big old King James English words, vowels and these and therefore, henceforth and perhaps, and they began reading genealogical tables, or they saw something and said, behold, he shall come up his clouds and his chariots as a whirlwind. They didn't understand what in the world it was talking about. It wasn't in modern English, probably, the version they read. They promptly closed it and thought, I'll never understand it anyway. Or, in some of their experiences in church, they heard some pastor intoning away about his text for this morning, began talking about faith or the inner you or a ray of light, or he talked about all the good qualities that we good, wonderful, non-sinning human beings as we go about our daily work of trying to knife one another. And he talked about love, and they just got bored. They got turned off. It didn't mean anything to them, because in this dog-eat-dog competitive world of striving to make ends meet, of driving a truck or a tractor, of washing the clothes and doing the yard, of housework, of raising babies, of washing diapers and doing the dishes, well, it just didn't really seem that what they heard this guy saying in the pulpit made any real sense or had anything to do. It didn't carry over into the real life. It didn't relate to what was happening in the street. It didn't give them what they really needed in order to cope in the day-to-day existence in this rotten, heinous world out here where if you don't fight, you don't survive. And so they couldn't see any relationship between the endless ceremony in a dimly lit interior of a darkened kind of a church with stained glass windows, pious prayers, kind of wailing, weeping sounds from the soloist and the organ, and about a 12-minute sermonette delivered by a character who didn't seem to belong to the 20th century. He kind of came out of a bit part from 1610 or something. And so, consequently, an awful lot of people were turned off about religion. As I've said so many times, is your religion any good if you understand it? Now, I mean that tongue-in-cheek. Of course, obviously, you ought to understand your religion. But what is religion? It ought to be merely the knowledge that there is a God, and the fact that human life is on this earth as a direct result of a program and a plan, a purpose that God had in mind, and then living in harmony with those laws and principles and precepts which operate, which work, which are as living and as active upon us as those profound laws of science, of physics, of chemistry that we can come to know, and with which man must work in harmony. I don't know why people in this modern era, because they take the idea of religion as being almost like some philosophy of life, like politics or economics and religion, and they divide it all up neatly into a separate little bracket in their mind. And they think, now here's my business life. Now that's the way I am when I'm doing my job and when I'm trying to make money. And so here you are working away, struggling, striving, investing, playing the stock market, trying to build up your business, trying to improve your wage and the way you act, whether or not you're totally honest, the various people you take advantage of, the things you do. Well, that's your business life. That is your workaday life. Of course, there are an awful lot of people who don't have any such lives as that. They stand in the unemployment line, sometimes three or four of them at the same time, while maintaining a part-time job here and there, but only keeping it every few days or a weekend or so. One good young guy did that and was making probably about $14,000-$15,000 a year on unemployment. But still, in one sense of the word, that was his workaday life. He was working at cheating the government and the state and the county and his fellow man in order to avoid work, because work and he just didn't get along together. Well, then there is your entertainment or your fun life. The life of partying with friends and quaffing a six-pack of beer, the golf and the enjoyment of sports, looking at television, reading the comics or the papers, reading a novel, relaxing, taking it easy, indulging yourself. That's a kind of a bracket or a part of your life. Then there is your private personal life, maybe your love life, your sex life. Then, of course, there is your home life. And sometimes those don't have anything to do with each other. But if you look at people's religious life, in how many cases of which you personally know does that religious life include reading, studying, coming to profoundly understand the Bible, knowing what it says, applying it in all of the rest of those lives? How many people do you know actually would open the Bible, the book of Proverbs, or examples in the Bible with regard to patriarchs and their children, or what Jesus said about children, or what the Apostle Paul said about children and husbands and wives, and ponder and think and study that, and then turn around and apply that in child-rearing, in living as a family with their children? Well, most people would be thought of as some kind of a nut. You can't do that and get away with it. That's got to be archaic and out of date. They don't seem to realize that the eternal Creator God, who made human minds and lives, who gives you the breath of air you breathe, who made the laws that operate and that act upon us in this physical environment of ours, also made hidden spiritual laws just as active, just as binding, and when we break them, they break us. When you have an explosion in a chemical lab, it's because you broke a law of some kind. When you have an explosion between husband and wife and child, it's because you broke a law of some kind. When you have an automobile accident, you broke a law, a principle, perhaps of inertia. You broke some type of a principle having to do with the movement of those very incredibly heavy automobile bodies around sometimes poorly constructed streets or roadways when you yourself got into a hazardous situation because of alcohol or drugs or something else. Usually there have been some broken laws that went ahead of that. The automobile manufacturer may have broken a lot of laws and they slipshod in different workmanship of the Monday morning automobile with about 25 easily determinable factory defects. You may have broken laws because of your condition mentally, physically, and so on, emotionally. Somebody slams out of the house, slams the door, jumps in your car, turns it on, roars out of the driveway, and goes careening around the corner in search of a booze joint because he's mad at his wife, and they wonder why they're getting a wreck. There may have been an awful lot of laws broken by the time somebody is in the midst of a grinding tragedy in the highway. But broken laws break bodies, break minds, and break lives. It's just that simple. Now, why do people have to sit back here as if religion is kind of weird? I mean, religion is full of prayers and lilies and smells like dust, you know, looks like a green-felled hat and has steeples on it and signs and stained glass. That's religion. But now business, well, business, man, I mean, that's banking and insurance and percentages and interest and payments and money changing hands. Business is investment property and leases and sales. Business is figuring overhead. Business is hard, cold, factual, practical living. You know, business is competition. Business is strife. And sometimes business is cheating, too. Whenever the twins will meet, religion and business, what in the world have they got to do with each other? Most people would figure if you were religious and in business, you're the biggest sucker that ever came along. You're going to take a beating no matter what you say or do. Because you can't be honest and succeed in business. That's what most people would tell you. And an awful lot of people who are willing to admit it, who are making a go of it in business, and of course the newspapers are full of that. I couldn't say that differently, but I won't. But at any rate, they will admit cheerfully that they got where they were in business, dishonestly. Many people were very willing to do that when they were polled about whether or not they had to use a little bit of backstabbing. They had to figure out a way to get the guy above them, to remove him, to get his job. But people do tend to take religion and isolate it to the never-never world of utter meaninglessness, where it is utterly empty theory and philosophy and has no hard, cold practicality to modern daily living. That's the way most people are. They don't seem to realize that the Bible is merely that handbook given by the Creator, who designed the product we know as fellow man and human beings, with our minds, with our emotions, with our comparatively short lifespan. A human being made of the dust of this earth, having to absorb the elements of the earth around us, coming from the dirt and the dust beneath our feet, managed to get into our mouths in the form of vegetables that science could never tell us how to grow. Only God makes seeds. Science doesn't even help us out all that much when it comes to fertilizing and preparing some type of horrible chemicals to keep the insects off of them if the whole story were ever told. But science never built a tree. Science never made a carrot grow. Science never put the exact elements, iron and the like that your body needs, into the roots that made a beet. Science never grew a grain of wheat. Science never did any of that, but God did. And that's what it takes to keep you alive. Science doesn't create air. It just pollutes it. Science didn't make the sunshine. And if you couldn't have those things walking around on this earth as a physical metabolic organism of millions of cells, of tissues, of sinew, of bone, of a circulatory, nervous, skeletal, and muscular system that is you, with a whatever it is, pound or two or three, a gray matter, so many cubic centimeters, I guess we buy motorcycles by the number of cubic centimeters, they don't usually judge people that way. But you got gray matter up there in a cranial compartment that is the most well-protected part of your body, presumably because what is in there is the most important, although in some cases you really begin to wonder And here we are, a living, vital human being. Why? What are we all about? Why are we on this earth? Why do most of us cry and wring our hands? Why are we unhappy? Why are we always disappointed? Why are we upset? Why are we frustrated? Why do people live the life of never quite, of just missed it, of oh, nuts, or oops, or, you know, the life which is that unrequited, unfulfilled, unsuccessful, unhappy, frustrated existence where nothing works out the way we really imagine and hope that maybe it would? We don't seem to realize that we, as living human beings, are just as much dependent upon living in accordance with laws as would be anything a human being can design, which is like a piece of machinery, whether it's an automotive vehicle, whether it's an airplane that flies, whether it's a piece of communications equipment, whatever it may be, it must adhere to laws. Now, when aeronautical engineers are trying to design a new aircraft, and they're trying to put together something that will propel a human body at blinding speed through this envelope of air around this earth, and they find that there's something wrong with it. The wing loading is wrong. Something is wrong with the design of the wings or the fuselage. Something is wrong with the propeller. They don't just defy those laws and decide they're going to make it work anyway. No, instead they have to go back and find out what laws, what principles they are breaking, and there are known computerized methods by which those laws can be discovered, and then they can get in harmony with those laws. And the closer they get in harmony with them, the more they cooperate with what is, with what does exist, the better the design they have. Once in a great while, you'll see some fabulous aircraft design that seems to be better than them all. Some of the venerable old antiques, as they almost are today, that are still with us, like the old DC-3 or the military C-46, still flying today. Some of those old designs, like the Beach Stagger Wing, it was a real fast aircraft, over 200 miles an hour in its day, and it's kind of like an antique these days, but don't a lot of airplane fans wish that Beach Stagger to go back and start designing those things from scratch and make them brand new. They're supposed to be antiques. There are a lot of them around in mint condition today, and they're faster than an awful lot of this. Of the real so-called high-performance singles, and even a lot of the twins that are around the market today. There are some old venerable designs that were really just uniquely well done. And they're still with us, and they're still flying. The 747's got a glide ratio you wouldn't believe. It's a great design. So is the 707. They're great aircraft. But, you know, the aeronautical engineers had to design those aircraft in accordance with laws. Now they're getting aircraft just barely, you know, just barely pushing the sound barrier, just remaining barely subsonic. Dassault of France is one because they designed the fanjet Falcon that I fly. And in a computerized design, they have figured out what is called a supercritical wing. Where in effect, it's almost like the wing were designed in reverse with the curvature on the bottom of it instead of the top. But it is able, because of the design of that wing, which is all fed into a computer and very scientifically and carefully done, they're able to push an airplane with a certain weight, a certain speed, just barely subsonic, clear up to Mach 8.8 or so, maybe even over 9, that's 9-tenths or 8,800 of the speed of sound, and they do so very, very efficiently. But you know, when they discover that something is wrong, they don't go back and just decide we're going to keep on breaking that law and losing people. When they had the certification program for the Falcon 10, a couple of test pilots that had come straight out of the military picked the rudder, pulled the flexion, pretty good speeds, and separated the tail assembly. Well, now they found that there was no need to do anything at all about the tail because it was very, very strong, very powerful, but it was just that it should have been operated within a certain tear at certain speeds, and no one would ever think, because they have a max maneuvering speed for aircraft, no one would ever think that you'd beat a rudder just as hard as you could full deflection at a speed above that maximum maneuvering speed. But these guys who come straight out of the military, and they're used to driving aircraft where you can do that with them, because they're stressed for that. But no matter, in order to prevent even that from happening, the Dassault people went back and they so totally beefed up that tail structure that even if you did that, you'd still come out of it okay. Now, people who design aircraft and uniquely, I would say, aircraft over and above even automobiles, other vehicles, and motorcycles, and so on, because aircraft are flying, and you got to get them down safely, or else you don't stay alive. So the state of the art is a little more advanced than in the case of automobiles. And they know and they understand that they are working with and in harmony with laws, and they don't try to break those laws, they try to get in harmony with them. Now you, as a human being, living your life, enjoying life, trying to be happy, trying to be satisfied and fulfilled, ought to realize that there are myriads of laws that have to do with your emotions, with your physical health and well-being, with fitness and disease, laws that regulate the universe, the solar system, your earthly environment, and laws that regulate you. If you would only get in harmony with those laws, discover what they are, and find how to obey more of them. The simple laws of getting a good night's sleep, of getting the right kind of exercise, of breathing enough good clean air, of drinking enough good pure water. Now, I know it sounds strange to say the Bible talks about things like that, but the Bible is a handbook on childbearing, on physical health and exercise, on right emotional attitude, on marriage, on business, work, and play. The Bible is a handbook about humankind, about human beings, about human nature. It is the designer's book that came from the one who made humankind and made us to function in a certain way. And yet most people never study the Bible. Now the Bible is divided up into Old and New Testament, the Old and New Covenant. The Old Covenant was an agreement between God and ancient Israel. He said, "Will you obey my laws?" They said, "Yes, we will." He said, "Fine, in that case I will bless you. I will give you rain in due season, good crops, healthy, happy babies with long lives ahead of them, no wars, you know, none of these other problems that plague people. I'll give you every great blessing." They were going to be, in that sense, a nation with a God instead of a king, a nation with a series of judges who were determined from those written laws, as well as in direct communication with God, what was the way to run the nation, how to settle disputes between people, how to handle problems of landmarks or inheritance, or problems in regard to sales or interest rates, or whether or not you ought to charge someone in your own community usury or interest. And do you know that in the ideal community you shouldn't? According to God's law anciently, the idea of charging a person usury or lending money and then making him pay you for the privilege was wrong. And God didn't allow them to do that in ancient Israel. But at any rate, they soon began, as you will read in this lesson of humankind, all the way from the beginning of the Bible on up to the conclusion of the Old Testament, they began to want to have all the evils, apparently, that other nations had around them. All the parades and the fanfare and the flags and the banners and the pink caps with the fruit salad and the decorations. The idea that young men could march carrying glittering swords or spears or later on guns and so on. It appealed to people. They wanted a king. When they had an opportunity to get rid of an ancient old guy named Samuel, kind of a doddering old type that they'd grown tired of anyway, because all they ever did was tell him what was wrong with them. They were making mistakes and wondering why they were suffering. He would say, "Well, you're breaking God's laws." And they would say, "We don't want to hear that anymore. We just want you to remove the penalty. We want to be free to break the laws and have the penalty go away." Well, they saw Tall, old Tall. He was marching along, and man, what a figure. He captured the hearts of everybody. He was head and shoulders taller than any other human being in the whole kingdom. They thought, "Now there's a warrior for you." So they decided they wanted Saul as a king. Samuel was pretty upset. God told Samuel, "They haven't rejected you. Don't worry about it. It's not you that has fallen in disfavor. You're not the person who is being kicked out. It is me they're turning their backs on. So you go ahead and you give them a king according to the manner of their own heart, and you tell them, here's the kind of a king you're going to have." So Samuel did. He said, "Well, I'll tell you, you can have Saul as your king. No longer will you be a monarchy with a king who is God, and with a judge, a series of judges to merely discern difference between good and evil and right and wrong to settle problems for you. But instead, you're going to have a king. Now that king's going to come along and pack the daylights out of you. He's going to take your young sons and put them in the army. He's going to take away your lands. You're probably going to begin to have attacks from without. You're going to have drought and bad weather because God's going to turn his back on you. And instead of intervening to give you good weather and good rain and good season just when you need it, as you've had before, Well, suddenly everything's going to go wrong. It's going to seem like nature is against you, like the land is betraying you. Farmers are going to be wrecked and ruined. They'll find out that their life's work is destroyed by just one thunderstorm. But that's the kind of a life you want. You want to have that king. You want to have a military organization. You want to go to war. Fine. You got it. So they had it. And I mean, by the time they'd had it for a while, they didn't want it anymore. But it was too late to get off the bandwagon. They didn't know about that. So you see the lesson in the Old Testament. You know, the Bible is awfully hard on its heroes. The Bible is the book that shows all of the problems of the greatest. It shows, for instance, in the case of David, a man who was one of the greatest human beings who ever walked the earth, a man who was a repenter, a man who was deeply emotional, a man who was religious toward God, but one of the most fearful warriors you'd ever want to meet in the melee. I mean, when you read about what was in that sack he threw at the feet of Saul to get a hold of his wife and the first marriage he made, among many others, you'd be absolutely dumbfounded to find out what the guy put himself through just to win the hand of a maiden. His name was Michael. A little later on, he didn't really want her very badly because she was one of his old cronies with a strident voice. And when he saw the ark in the hands of the Philistines and knew that it ought to be right back in its rightful place in Jerusalem and was leaping and dancing at the head of the entourage when they came into the streets of Jerusalem, Michael looked out the window and saw it, David dancing and so on. Then later, she was so small, she accused him of dancing in order to show up in front of the girls. Of course, he was a king. But I know that an awful lot of people who feel that office or position in life is supposed to grant them all kinds of special consideration and understanding from people that are close to them are in for a rude awakening. In this case, there was no such thing, so of course that was the last time David and Michael ever saw each other, at least directly, so far as you can read in the Bible. But also, in spite of all of the wonderful, warm qualities of David, it showed that he was capable of great sin. He was capable of plotting a murder in order to consummate an adulterous union so he could marry a woman that he wanted. He was capable of great, huge flaws of his nature and his character. But through it all, as you read the Psalms, you find that David was a man after God's own heart. You find that he is going to be over a throne, over Israel, on into eternity, according to the book of Jeremiah. He is going to be resurrected and sit on a throne with Jesus Christ of Nazareth. So the Bible is very hard on its heroes, but it's also very magnanimous and very forgiving when it shows their good qualities. It's a story of life. It's a story of human beings. It's a story of the way we ought to be. You ought to begin reading the Bible and you'll understand it. We got a book that's called Read the Book, which is handy on that subject, and also one on how to understand prophecy. You ought to just write for a booklet, or better yet, call that toll-free number right now, on how to understand some of what seems to be a little bit vague about the Bible, about trees and mountains, rivers, lakes and valleys, and what do they symbolize, about many-headed creatures and a woman riding a beast in the book of Revelation. What's that all about? What about biblical timetables and a prophetic year, this day being a year fulfilled? How do you learn about things like that where the Bible begins to become simple to you instead of so profoundly difficult to understand? The operators are waiting to take your call right now if you'd like that booklet on how to understand prophecy and also the current number of the Plain Truth magazine. The toll-free number you can call is 800-423-4444. They're waiting to take your call right now if you'll dial that toll-free number. If you live in Alaska, California, or Hawaii, you'll have to dial area 213, and the number is 577-5225. Otherwise, it's toll-free, 800-423-4444. Or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, and request that booklet, How to Understand Prophecy. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your request, along with the call letters of this station, to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.